You are listening to another Screenfish One-on-One, this time with actor and writer Simon Farnaby. Simon is the writer of Paddington 2, and this week we're excited to chat with him about his goals for the film, the impact of his acting career on his career as a screenwriter, and his role in the Star Wars universe. Welcome to the conversation. Welcome to Screenfish. Hi, Simon. How are you?
Hi, I'm good, Steve. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. I'm doing great. Thank you so much for chatting with me. I know, even for a few minutes, it's great to talk to you.
Okay, cool.
How did you come to be associated with Paddington 2?
Well, I've known Paul King for about 20 years. We started doing Fringe Theatre together, so I don't know what your equivalent here is, but it would basically be doing shows and sort of scout huts and schools, very small events with sort of usually two people watching, usually our mum and dad. So we go way back. And then Paul wrote a film called Bunny and the Bull, which is a small independent film, his first film. So I was in, I think I played the lead part. And I helped a bit on writing that, but Paul wrote it. And then he got Paddington 2 off the back of that. And then similarly, he got Paddington 1. Off the back of Bunny and the Bull, and he said to me, can you help out with a bit of story? So Paul wrote one, but I helped out with some jokes. I sort of wrote a bit of my scene with Barry the security guard, you know.
Right.
Originally that was just one sort of little line, you know, when he sort of and I said, what about if he takes a fancy to this cleaning lady, you know, and we built the scene around it. So then on two, Paul, I think, just said, would you like to write it with me? Because, you know, we're friends, and I had a handle on the world, and we have the same sensibility of sort of, you know, humour foremost, but you know, a lot of warmth and sort of a lot of heart in the stories we like to tell. So we were a good fit, and thankfully David Heyman, the producer, sort of allowed me to work with Paul. He trusted Paul's instinct that we could do something special together, and it looks like it's doing okay.
Yeah, well, it's doing very, very well, very highly rated, and looking forward to it opening here. You know, Paddington has such a legacy. It really is one of those stories that has lasted for generations. What is it about Paddington that has made his story so endearing?
I think everyone sort of sees themselves a little bit in Paddington, and you know, we're all a sort of fish out of water in some regard. You know, whether I remember starting school, you know, and feeling I didn't quite fit in, and feeling I was always making mistakes, and nobody really likes to admit that, but we're all sort of trying to find our feet in the world. And when you see Paddington, or when I read Paddington, or when I saw the there used to be the series on TV that I watched as a kid and I loved. I loved that he made mistakes like I did, but he kept on trying and he kept positive, and no matter how huge the mistakes were, you know, whether he was knocking the house down or trying to bake a cake and setting the kitchen on fire, he always had a little sort of, you know, he never took it too badly, and he was always stood up, brushed himself off, and got on to the next thing. So I think it's a mixture of the sort of comedy in his sort of hatlessness and clumsiness, but also there's a sort of great warmth in his character that I think endears him to people.
Sure. Now, I know he passed away in the summer, but did you get a chance to speak with Michael Bond about the film as it developed?
I didn't. I've actually never met Michael. Paul had a relationship with him from the first film, so
okay.
Paul would always go and see him, and it was very important to Paul and myself that Michael Bond approved of what we were doing with his bear, you know. But Paul would go and see him and talk him through what we had in mind, and Michael always read the scripts and read the drafts, you know, of Paddington 2, and I think he saw some bits of it before he died, and he was very happy with it. And his daughter, Karen, carries, you know, the mantle, really. She's she saw Paddington 2 and loved it and said her dad would have approved. So that's hugely important to us. He's obviously an enormous figure in making the films, you know, not only the books, but, you know, we're always aware of him and needing his approval, you know. It's a great shame that he couldn't see it through to this one.
It's wonderful that even with the first one, that through Paul he was able to have an influence and that you guys care so much about his vision. Now, the first film really focuses on his relationship with his family, but the second one seems to have a larger scope. I was wondering, what were your goals? Were there any challenges as you were writing a sequel?
Yeah, it was very much, you know, from our early discussions when we were trying to think of a story, we both liked the idea of meeting the neighbours in the street. You know, we had an idea very early on. We went, it'd be nice to have a little sequence at the beginning where we see him, what his life is like in London now. As you say, the last film was all about family and finding a home, but what is a home? A home is in a place, in a community. And we always thought Paddington's always a good sort of community figure. He'd always be the neighbour who would help you out, and if you needed anything, his instinct is to help, and his kindness, you know. So we thought he'd be very popular with his neighbours. And so really this film's about him finding a community, you know, finding his place in London, and we really liked the idea of him meeting first the neighbours and then Phoenix Buchanan. We had this idea for this sort of celebrity in his neighbourhood, and Paddington's always funny when he's up against celebrities and pompous people because he sees everyone as the same. You know, he'd see Phoenix the same as a prisoner or a homeless guy. You know, so we liked that idea, and then. So we knew we had a sort of great sort of opening idea on, you know, having Paddington in the community, and then when we saw prison, you know, he gets into trouble and he ends up in prison, you know, even though he's innocent. And then we thought, you know, he's then meeting even more people. He's got this sort of this community of people who are deemed by society to be reprobates, you know, criminals. Mm. And we also thought that was a nice sort of, comedically, you know, as well as sort of philosophically, for a character like Paddington to come up against those, that sort of group of people would be a good sort of central, a middle bit to the story. So, but yeah, it was really about him finding a community and his place in the world and meeting more people. There's a lot more characters in this film.
Mm. Mm-hmm. You've got a great career as an actor. How has that helped you in developing scripts and writing a script?
Yeah, I think it helps hugely, actually. Because I am an actor, I have been an actor, I know how actors respond to parts when they get sent. I think it's very interesting. We always sort of, when we were trying to get Hugh Grant, you know, to play Phoenix, I was constantly going, I know what he's going to be thinking, I know what he's going to respond to, because I know what I would as an actor. Very often actors open the screenplay and they're really not that interested in the whole story. They're interested in the part they're going to play. And whether you like it or not, an actor's going to go, am I going to score in this part? Is this going to be a part that I can... And really, that's how actors think. And of course, because they're putting themselves up on screen, so they want to know that they're going to enjoy themselves, and it's you know, people are going to think they're great in it, and you know, you're always looking for that part that is going to show off your talents very well. So I think being an actor helps you. It helps make every single part juicy. You know, you can't send anything out that's half-assed and that anyone could play. You know, it's got to be a part that's unique, that someone goes, oh, I know why they've picked me for this part, because I'm good at this or I'm good at that. Even the tiny parts, like, you know, Dr. Jaffrey, you know, played by Sanjeev Bhaskar, in his, you know, he's only got a couple of lines, but I think you can tell in the writing, or I hope you would, that it's a nice little part, you know, and it's got a good comedic couple of beats, and he has a quite strong flavour as a character. So I think you learn just to the pandering to an actor's ego is actually good for the script. It's alive, you know. Makes you work that bit harder.
You know, speaking of your career as an actor, I know you had a role in Rogue One recently, which is, I don't know if you know, but Star Wars is a little big. It's a rather large franchise. I was just wondering, what was your experience being involved in something like that? What was that like?
It was very funny because we were in the middle of writing Paddington 2, and I'd really put a halt on acting. Acting takes up a lot of time. You know, you go to the set and you sit in the trailer for 3 days, and then someone calls it. And I thought, this call came through, and I'm a Star Wars fan, so I was excited. But at the same time, they were like, we need you for sort of 4 days. And like I just said to you, actually, I looked at the part, and it was just, there wasn't really any lines at all. It was just the next thing pilot. So I initially actually said no, because I thought, I'm going to be sitting around on set for 4 days, and we're in a tight space with writing, and I went, no, I'm very flattered, but I don't think it's for me. And then the producer actually rang me, and he said, look, we're going to improvise some lines, and we're looking for characters and the humour. And he sort of persuaded me, and I said to Paul, can I go away for a few days? And he went, yeah, go and enjoy yourself. And I loved it. It was great, because I got to sit in the next wing, and it was like a fairground ride, and had this huge screen in front of me. But I have to say, I didn't get to. Every time I tried to improvise a funny sort of line, I'd just be, yeah, don't bother with that. Just say incoming TIE fighters. I can't remember the line I had was that we used in the film was we haven't got long. Yeah. So it was. Which isn't a very funny sort of character for life. So in many ways, I was lied to by the production team, but I was glad I did it, because, funnily enough, I still haven't seen the film. I've got a 3-year-old daughter, so my window for watching films is so, like, I watch it sort of filmed about sort of 20 minutes at a time, because that's the only time I have before I fall asleep. So I haven't got to my bit yet. I've watched about two-thirds of it. But it's great, actually, so far. You know, hopefully I'll get to my bit someday.
I understand what you mean. I just did that with my 7-year-old. It's half an hour at a time. Star Wars movies take a little longer. It's kind of fun.
They do, yeah. You have to rewind a bit and go, what was happening again? Yeah. Why are they on this planet?
It's all
part of the fun, isn't it?
Absolutely. So going back to Paddington here, what is it that you hope the audiences take away from the film?
Well, I think we started thinking about Paddington and his values, really. His values are given to him by Aunt Lucy, you know, which is be kind and polite, the world will be right. And if you look for the good in others, you'll find it, you know. And we sort of really wanted to make a film that said that really is the best way of, you know, in the long run. You know, obviously Paddington gets into trouble and his values are tested, but in the long run, if you have those values of kindness and courtesy, and instead of always looking for the bad in people and assuming the worst of people, if you assume the best in people and look for the good in them, then eventually that will prove to make the community, you know, the world a better place. And I think as well about the value, you know, what do we value in society, you know? We have Phoenix Buchanan, who's this big celebrity, and he never does anything for anyone but himself, you know. And yet his people sort of love him, you know, he's sort of idolized. We have this court scene where everyone laughs at his jokes and thinks he's amazing. And then there's Paddington, who does these little acts of kindness, and maybe we value the wrong people in society sometimes is another thing that I hope people will take away.
Just as we wrap up here, is there anything else you're working on that you want to tell us about?
Not sure what I can say at the moment. I'm doing a screenplay of. Do you have this thing, The Magic Faraway Tree? It's an Enid Blyton set of books. It's a British writer sort of from the 50s, and it's about this family that moved to the countryside and discover this magic tree that there's sort of elves and fairies live in, and they have different worlds at the top of the tree, and it's a really funny sort of magical sort of, it's a bit like a Narnia sort of
okay
story. So I'm working on that at the moment for a Studio Canal.
That's exciting.
So hopefully that'll transfer over here. But I mean, Paddington wasn't that well known over here, was he? When I mean, people knew of him, but I think I think if the film is great, and then people go, oh, you know, they're not so worried about the source material. Oh,
no, Paddington's well. Now again, I'm in Canada, but I grew up reading the Paddington books and the Paddington.
Oh, really? Great.
Yes, yeah, and the Paddington film was very well received. But the books, sure, yeah. I know all the stories of Paddington from going back for as a kid. They were very important.
Oh, great. Oh, that's good. The first one did very well. I really hope this one connected too.
Yeah, I hope so too. Simon, thanks so much for talking with me. I really appreciate it.
No problem, Steve. Thank you.
Have a good day. And as always, we started the conversation. This was Screenfish.